Go ye into all the world. Our reading this morning is from Mary Oliver, and I believe she's one of those special writers who has indeed gone into all the world and into many hearts. She doesn't just write poetry and poetry about nature, she also writes prose. And I want to share with you this morning a short reading. It's called West Wind, number 2. You are young, so you know everything. You leap into the boat and begin rowing. But listen to me. Without fanfare, without embarrassment, without any doubt, I talk directly to your soul. Listen to me. Lift the oars from the water. Let your arms rest and your heart and heart's little intelligence. And listen to me. There is life without love. It's not worth a bent penny or a scuffed shoe. It's not worth a body of a dead dog 9 days unburied. When you hear, a mile away and still out of sight, the churn of the water as it begins to swirl and roll, fretting about the sharp rocks, when you hear that unmistakable pounding, when you feel the mist on your mouth and sense ahead the embattlement, the long falls plunging and steaming, then row. Row for your life toward it. Mary Oliver wrote of poetry, poems are not words, after all, but fires for the cold, ropes let down for the lost, something as necessary as bread in the pockets of the hungry. The same could be said about love, for love is just that, after all. You might be thinking, it's February, so of course we have the theme of love. And even though Reverend Eric said he's looking forward to St. Patrick's Day, there's Valentine's coming too. Called you out, Eric. We got all those holidays coming up, the red ones, the green ones, and whatever. It's all happy, it's all good. But isn't love, it's just great timing for a monthly theme. I mean, February, we have love in our minds and in our hearts. So I got to thinking about how do we describe love? And I know as adults, we're like, it's this or whatever, whatever. But sometimes our children get right to the point. I don't know if you caught the local newspaper, the Clintonville Spotlight. It's the same one we had our holiday schedule in. But in this month's issue, on the back, there's a picture right here of some of our SYC kids, our School for Young Children. They made the paper. And the headline is, Preschoolers Share Thoughts on Love. So there were two questions. The first one, what does love mean? Jackson, it means they super like you. And if you didn't have a heart, you couldn't love anything. Duncan, It means I love you so much. Bay. Love means you love someone and have a hearty thing. A heart is an organ. Nora, I love you so much. Morgan, I love you really, really much. And Harry, I really like you. So the next question was, who do you love? Nora, my daddy, my cat, my dog, Evelyn, my mom, my new baby brother, Russell, Morgan, my feet. Brian, my whole family, and Nora, my guinea pig that just went away. Oh. Those are some of our children. SYC is an outreach of this congregation. How many of you actually attended SYC as kids or were parents who sent your kids to SYC? Yeah, amazing, amazing what they do. There are so many kinds of love. I thought about how I learned about love, and one of the ways was through Sunday school many years ago. Seems there are three kinds by that version. There's the Eros kind, the kind that's need-based love, the physical attraction kind of love. Then there's Philia love. That is the devoted companionship type of love. It's about relationship as friends, good friends. And lastly, there's agape love, the kind of love that is giving, even when you get nothing in return. But Mary Oliver's words are more than about mere definitions. They ask something of us. Oliver writes in poetry and in prose, but when she speaks of the fires for the coal, the ropes let down to the lost, something as necessary as breads in the pockets of the hungry, I hear Oliver saying yes to all the types of love. She includes the Eros love of passion, combines it with the filial love of neighbor, and insists on agape love of giving, because that's what love is all about. In this way, love is intense, relational, and vulnerable. It calls us all to be fully alive. Oliver pulls us beyond categorical love and talks about the essence of what love represents. She is literal in the poetry kind of way, describing what it must feel like to be an outsider, to be offered a welcome, for the wanderer to be given resources, and for the poor to have manna. Fires for the cold, from the cold. Many things in life grow cold, not just our bodies in snowy weather. Movements can also grow cold. In the last years of his life, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. sponsored a poor people's campaign. It was a part of his dream, but it was slow to catch fire. After his assassination, the passion deflated and the movement struggled to find a voice. 50 years later, we still have a devastating poverty rate among us and among our neighbors. But the fires of a movement are being rekindled by the Reverend Dr. William Barber. You might remember Barber from the General Assembly that was here in Columbus two summers ago now. He's on fire, let me tell you. He's just awesome. Barber has been speaking and preaching to UUs and to the whole world to awaken us to this unfinished business. The Poor People's Campaign is a national call for moral revival. It is uniting tens of thousands of people across the country to challenge the evils of systematic racism, poverty, the war economy, ecological devastation, and the nation's distorted morality. Tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, downtown at the State House, there's a kickoff press conference and rally. There'll be short speeches followed by a rally for unity. I hope many of you can join us. And we have signs that we want to bring along. And they're big and yellow, that Unitarian yellow, if you will, that looks so good on everyone. These signs will be at the rally tomorrow. Aren't they awesome? They were gathering dust. They were under the steps. Let's pull them out. Yep. Thank you, our Vanna Whites. Thank you. So I invite you to show up and join us tomorrow morning at 11 at the State House. It'll be a fun time for all, and we'll show where we stand, where we show up. So fires for the cold. Let you show up en masse on the side of love. Mary Oliver has another piece for us. She talks about letting ropes down to the lost. When I was a young adult, I was lost. I had privilege, but I struggled with self-confidence, lost jobs, and was discriminated against based on gender and sexual preference. I was estranged from family for some of the same reasons. I sought a religious home and was told, "We don't do people like you here." I was an outsider to myself, at work, at home, and at church. Then you offered me ropes for the lost. I say you in the collective sense, for you see, the ropes we hold within these walls are like the threads of connection that connect every Unitarian Universalist congregation across this country, continent, and world. We are a part of a larger tapestry. On some nondescript Sunday, probably not a snowy Sunday, a few people, a greeter, an usher, someone sitting nearby, dared to see me as just another person, not a set of labels and identities. They said the simple word, "Welcome." And then they did just that. They welcomed me. You welcomed me. Mary Oliver continues, "Bread in the pockets of the hungry." Did you know we're a meal train? I think that's pretty cool. Did you know we're a meal train for Sanctuary? When the Mennonite church gets busy and Edith Espanol, wife, mother, immigrant, and in Sanctuary to avoid deportation, when the church gets so busy, like ours does at times too, but when the Mennonite church down the street gets so busy that she can't access the kitchen, we not only prepare food, accept donations from others, we also deliver meals so she and her family can eat together. I think that's pretty cool. If you were stuck in the church forever, wouldn't you appreciate someone who brought you a meal every now and then? That's how it is with us. We are a meal train. Food is not the only thing we deliver. In their religious education classes, our children put together a care package with letters and cards for Edith. They were delivered this week. So when you go down High Street and look left at the Mennonite Church, know that Edith is inside, smiling as she reads the cards from our children. We also cook meals every other Friday for Faith Mission. And I understand we have volunteers who work with feeding at the YWCA. We share the plate with food pantries and agencies working hard to end poverty and homelessness. And on Sundays, we offer breakfast before our service. Did anyone eat breakfast this morning? I know I didn't eat, but I sure smelled it. This is how love shows up in our world. I like to say that love is an acronym, living our values every day. If you can't do the wooshy-woo-woo love, do living our values every day. Feeding the hungry is more than bread, though. Letting down ropes is not only for the lost, and it is more than lighting fires for the cold. In the reading this morning, Mary Oliver calls us to listen. She calls out three times, "Listen." Then she declares that there is life without love. But it is a life not worth living. She knows that life could be all impulse, all head, all talk. But life without the soul, the essence, the power of love, is not worth living. Oliver then challenges us that even when the waters are rough, to row toward it. Now, I know not all of us will be on the front lines of justice. I know that all of us will not be able to participate in the myriad of opportunities. Not even all of us have the issues all figured out. I don't. What we can do is support each other in whatever way we can. If we cannot cook or be a part of the meal train, we can talk about what it must feel like to be faced with losing one's family, relationships, and known country and way of life. If we feel like it, we are not lost, we can certainly extend a warm welcome to those you don't know, because you never know what your words and smile might mean. If you cannot be on the front lines, maybe you can fix a sandwich for those who are. In our workshop yesterday, Reverend Joan Van Beesler reminded us that it takes four people supporting every one person on the front line. You think you're not important? You can't help? Four people for every one person on the front lines. Regardless, we can all be living, breathing examples of love. We can all live our values every day, or at least try and try again. Row for your life. A bigger love comes when we build fires in the cold, let down ropes to the lost, and give something as necessary as bread to the pockets of the hungry. And in closing, I would like to add my voice to the speakers of the last two Sundays. Amanda Hayes, our ministerial intern, offered insights and powerful personal story to help us understand the culture of white supremacy. Lisa Brand, a fabulous lay leader and teacher, told us her story of how working for justice using restorative practices shows up in her classroom. She gave examples of shifting the school-to-prison paradigm, and she gave us a lot of hope. And I want to share with you what I will read tomorrow morning on our behalf at the State House down the street. Tomorrow morning is the Poor People's Campaign kickoff and rally. I'm one of two religious leaders speaking. There are many ways to measure health and well-being of country, state, and community. Economically, we use the gross national product to measure growth and decline. GDP is the sum of goods produced by people and companies. Production is what matters. Humans are a line item expense. Morally, we use a different measure. To summarize Hubert Humphrey's last speech, the moral test of a government is how it treats the children, the elderly, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. Today we glorify the wealthy, give scraps to the rest. 21% of our children live in poverty. The mentally ill are housed in prisons, and we give people of color jail time. Spiritually, our measure is the capacity to love our neighbor. In an age of rampant isolation, entitlement, and privilege, coupled with devastating extraction and refining of resources for our convenience, we have commodified spirituality, politicized religion, and forgotten what is sacred. As a country and in our state and communities, we fail to balance what we measure with what has deeper value. Instead of GDP to measure our economic health, why not use the Consumer Class Conditions Index? In place of production output, this index measures purchasing power by considering employment conditions, welfare, social exclusion, health, education, economic diversification, business environments, and quality of governance. The CCCI flips the GDP and considers the well-being of people first. Instead of a gilded age of rampant inequality where we deport, imprison, and criminalize skin tone, homelessness, and poverty, let us set our moral beacon on compassion and empathy. We must work to bend the moral arc of the universe toward justice. Instead of denying our spiritual nature, embrace it and do something. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., in his letter, Birmingham Jail, chided, "I have watched white churches stand on the sideline and merely mouth pious irrelevancy and sanctimonious trivialities. Instead of separation between body and soul, the sacred and the secular, it is time we get on our knees, get on our feet, and get thee to the state house. It is not okay to let our neighbors be mired in poverty. It is not okay to let children go without. It is not okay to let homelessness be the answer. We must meditate and pray, we must act, and we must persevere. To do anything less is to fail humanity 101. We are called to be better than that. Let us get to work and end poverty now." My friends, we are called to live our values every day, here at home, in our families, in our work, in our community, and yes, even at the state house. Love is what it's all about. Row for your life. Blessed be, and amen.